Given that we didn't invent it, how come the harp became such a ubiquitous symbol of Ireland? Mary Louise O'Donnell is the author of Ireland's Harp, The Shaping of Irish Identity, 1770 to 1880. Mary, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Even prior to the period that you concentrate on, was the harp taken to be a symbol of Ireland or Irishness? Or did somebody at some point make a very deliberate decision about this?
Well, actually, as you correctly identify, it's never been Irish. We can't claim it as our own. The Irish harp has been practiced in the country for probably over 1,000 years. And there's a lot of speculation about where it came from, probably Africa, possibly from modern day Iran, Iraq. But when it eventually came to Ireland, we made it our own and we made it a very distinctive instrument. So the three-sided figure is what characterises the Irish harp. There are loads of different types of harps around the world, but this kind of enclosed three-sided figure is what's distinctive about the Irish harps. But there was a great tradition for centuries and centuries. The Irish harpers, they developed a very distinctive style. So they grew their nails long, about an inch long, and they backed them with wax. So I don't know if you've ever seen that picture in the Guinness Book of Records when your nails grow, they kind of
curl
start
around.
To curl, exactly.
Yes.
So the sort of technique that they used would have been like almost like a claw technique. So they were picking the strings with the nails, and these were wire strings, so these produced a very like a bell-like sound. Mm. So they quickly kind of established this reputation throughout Europe as having this amazing technique, this amazing ability. Because they were part of early Gaelic civilization, they were patronised by chieftains, and they became a very important part of his entourage. So they were trained for often up to 2 decades to learn how to play repertoire, their technique, to accompany poetry, all of that. So they developed this reputation as being the best harpers in Europe.
Mm. And presumably for a Gaelic chieftain as well, there was a certain amount of prestige involved with having your own set of harpists around you.
Absolutely. I mean, the most important person probably in the entourage was the poet, because of course he was the person that could write the positive or negative things about you. But the poet never recited his own poetry. He had a reciteur, and the reciteur was accompanied by the harper. So they were part of this. I mean, the harper's nails were regarded as being so important that they were actually protected under Brehon law because of the beautiful sounds that they could produce. So they were really, really revered. I'm not so much sure it's the case now, but certainly back then it was.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that when, sort of the post-Norman conquest, when a visitor came to Ireland from Wales, Giraldus Cambrensis, he wrote about Ireland and every aspect of Irish culture. And, everything was barbaric. Irish people were barbaric. They spent too much time outside in the open air, they did too much hunting, etc. But the only redeeming factor about them was their music, and particularly the Irish harpers. And he was just mesmerised by the sound that they could produce. And it became the Irish harp became associated with Ireland as almost the only non-barbaric thing about them, this only redeeming feature in an otherwise kind of uncivilised race.
Because I suppose even then, when the English came, there was that symbol of a harp with a crown over it, or maybe the other way around. It's almost like they usurped our symbol to show that their ownership.
Well, you're actually right with that. I mean, I think as Ireland's Irish harpers gained a reputation through Europe, it was actually the first sort of, usage of an Irish harp as an emblem of Ireland was by the French. They used it on a roll of honours in the 13th century. It was a gold harp with a blue background. And that, from that point, the Irish harp became associated with Ireland and Irish people. And then the English kind of, I suppose, jumped on the bandwagon in the 16th century. And Henry VIII, there was an issue of coinage minted in the 16th century in England, but Irish coinage. And it was an Irish harp surmounted by an English crown. And of course, that was the first indication that Ireland was governed or ruled by England. It wasn't a sovereign nation. So it was, again, we claim it as our own, but it's very much European and very much English, in fact, in origin. So, I mean, really after that, it kind of, I suppose, grew legs in the early 17th century. The harp, a gold harp and a blue background, was incorporated on the royal standard. And then, I suppose, various different political and revolutionary movements for the next 200 years tried to get rid of the crown.
Yeah.
And then to place the gold harp on a green background, which is, of course, what happened ultimately in the late 18th century under the United Irishmen.
Yeah, so in the period you're writing about, there's a very deliberate decision to try and take it back.
Exactly, yeah.
And is that allied as well with, if you like, not a recreation of Irish culture, but a move towards trying to rediscover Irish culture and reframe Irish culture?
Absolutely.
People.
I think that's what the 18th century was all about, sort of the post-Battle of the Boyne period when the Protestant ascendancy became very confident. There was no sort of rebellions, no obvious rebellions really in the early 18th century, it kind of, they went through a phase where the harp became their cultural symbol. So even though it had been the quintessential Irish symbol, they really embraced it and they started to patronise harpers. And of course, they, you know, fostered patronage of Carolan, Turlough Carolan, people like that. And gradually over the course of the 18th century, then that became their emblem. And then, I mean, throughout the 18th century, the Protestant ascendancy was very much associated with the harp and the, surmounted by the crown. But by the time it came to the end of the 18th century, the United Irishmen were desperate to remove that crown. And, you know, even the motto of their movement was, "It is new, strong and shall be heard." In other words, you know, we're moving towards something completely separate here and we don't want to look to what the Irish harp has been in the past.
Has the physical, I mean, the physical design of the harp, has that changed much over the years?
Well, it has, I suppose, up until sort of the early 19th century, it would have been what's called a winged maiden harp. I don't know if you know the Ryanair's symbol.
Yes.
That's that kind of, basically the body of
the... looks slightly like a wing.
That's exactly what the harp that they would, reversing the other, it would face the other way. But that would have been the harp that would have been used kind of to represent English rule or British rule in Ireland up until the early 19th century. And then sort of halfway through the 19th century, this Brian Boru harp, you know, the one that's in Trinity College, that became the emblem that was embraced by nationalists in the 19th
Why
century.
Why is that called a Brian Boru harp?
It's supposed to have been Brian Boru's harp, the one that he enjoyed playing on.
Ask a stupid question, yes.
But that's all total rubbish.
Yeah, of course.
But it's a fascinating myth and a story associated with that. But it's now the Trinity College harp. But to be honest, it may as well just be called the Brian Boru harp because it has as much to do possibly with Brian Boru as Trinity College.
And so then the depictions of the harp, have they changed a great deal? Because you already talked about, you know, different coloured backgrounds and not having a crown over it, obviously. And even into the modern period, we still use harps, but sometimes they're barely recognisable as harps.
Well, that's true. I mean, after the foundation of the state, it was the Brian Boru harp that became the emblem of the Irish Free State and, you know, the Irish Republic. And it was used on the presidential standard. It was on all our coinage. And it just became the quintessential kind of emblem. But sort of in the last 15 to 20 years, particularly during the Celtic Tiger years, for whatever reason, government departments decided to rebrand the harp as their logo. It kind of, it was very much sort of a corporate identity almost. So, I mean, in the past, say 20, 30 years ago, when you received your envelope in the post, you know, for speeding or something like that, it had a harp, very severe, and you knew you were in trouble or you got your, you know, correspondence from the revenue or whatever. You knew it was that Brian Boru harp, which was very, very distinctive. Whereas for whatever reason in the last, as I say, about 15 years or so, they started to rebrand it. So there's various different, like a lot of them are very bizarre images. You know, the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform. That's, I call it the emaciated harp. It looks like a half-eaten harp. Bizarre. I mean, obviously, maybe that's what it's supposed to represent. I don't know. But even like, say, the National Development Plan, which would be in charge of roads and things like that, it's actually a harp that looks like it's toppling over. It's crazy.
Well, I suppose there are attempts to try and look a bit more modern and postmodern.
Maybe, but I suppose they don't really need to because, I mean, that Irish harp has been like identity. It's the perfect brand. It's been, you know, a part of Irish identity for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yes.
So they really don't need to design it. It's as perfect as it possibly could be.
But this also means, though, that every Ryanair plane has a symbol of British oppression monographed on the side of it.
I hadn't thought of it in that way.
You heard that here first, Michael O'Leary. The book is called Ireland's Harp, The Shaping of Irish Identity, 1770 to 1880. Mary Louise O'Donnell is the author. Mary, thank you very much for coming in to us today.
Sean.
We're going to take a break after...